Good evening. It's a pleasure to be here with you tonight, and I'm thankful for the opportunity. I did volunteer for this, and I guess in previous times that I've spoken, I've done well enough that the elders decided to let me do it again. So always thankful for that. This evening, we're going to look at a topic that maybe you've thought about before, maybe you haven't. If I could get the PowerPoint to work here. I don't do this often, as you can tell. My topic this evening is titled, Why Worship God? And I'm sure every single one of us, we probably can think of 1,000 reasons why we do. And we're going to be mostly in Psalm chapter 95. So we'll be going, we'll be revisiting that chapter quite often. And also, I just want to let everyone know that this outline was given to me by a friend of mine a while back. I have several sermon notes and topics. And so he told me I could use these as I see fit. So I was able to have a little help with my sermon. I am still not getting this thing to work. Okay. So if you haven't already, turn to Psalm 95. There we go. And it says, O come, let us sing unto the Lord. Let us make a joyful noise to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before his presence with thanksgiving and make a joyful noise unto him with psalms. For the Lord is a great God and a great King above all gods. In his hand are the deep places of the earth. The strength of the hills is his also. The sea is his, and he made it, and his hands formed the dry land. O come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker, for he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture and the sheep of his hand. Today, if ye will hear his voice, harden not your heart as in the provocation as in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my work. 40 years long was I grieved with this generation, and said, It is a people that do err in their heart, and they have not known my ways, unto whom I swear in my wrath that they should not enter into my rest. So, excuse me, within Psalm 95, there are it gives four reasons why we worship God. And like I said, again, we could probably think of many more reasons. The first reason is that God is above all gods. And again, in Psalm 95:3, for the Lord is a great God and a great King above all gods. Another thing is that God is above man. Turn with me to Acts 10, verses 25 and 26. This is I believe it is Cornelius, Peter talking to Cornelius here. It says, And Peter was coming in, Cornelius met him, fell down at his feet, and worshipped him. But Peter took him up, saying, Stand up, I myself also am a man. So Peter tells Cornelius, Don't worship me, I'm just a man. And then another thing is a very familiar verse, Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. You know, our thoughts are not God's thoughts. God is above man in every way possible. And also, God is above the angels, Revelation 22, verses 8 and 9. And this is John's here, the Apostle John. It says, And I, John, saw these things and heard them. And when I had heard and seen, I fell down to worship before the feet of the angel which showed me these things. Then saith he unto me, See thou do it not, for I am thy fellow servant, and of thy brethren the prophets, and of them which kept the sayings of this book, worship God. So the angel tells John that, you know, he needs to keep the saying of this book, which is to worship God. And which brings us to the next kind of subpoint here, that God is the only one worthy of worship. I know here fairly recently in our Bible class, we looked at Elijah and the 450 prophets of Baal in 1 Kings. And that's in 1 Kings 18. Just want to look at a couple verses here. 1 Kings 18:21. And Elijah came unto all the people and said, "How long halt ye between two opinions? If the Lord be God, follow him, but if Baal, then follow him." And the people answered him not a word. And then, you know, we're all familiar with that story, how they set up altars and these 450 prophets of Baal, you know, did everything they could to call out to their God. And of course, we remember Elijah kind of starts making fun of them, saying, "Hey, maybe he's on a trip, or maybe he's asleep." And these prophets of Baal cry out to Baal for, I believe it's pretty much like all day. And then it becomes Elijah's turn, and Elijah douses the altar with a lot of water to basically prove that he's not cheating. And after he asked God to do what God can do, that entire altar is consumed. The water was licked up, the rocks and everything became ashes. And I remember, you know, in science class, it takes a very high temperature for rocks to melt. I can't imagine what the temperature of that fire was that turned those rocks into basically dust. And then verse 39, so after this event happens, we see the people's response. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces, and they said, "The Lord, he is the God. The Lord, he is the God." So they finally realize God is the one true God. And this reminds me of what Jesus said in response to being tempted by the devil in Matthew chapter 4, verse 10. Then Jesus saith unto him, Get thee hence, Satan, for it is written, Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. You know, it kind of, and so with this, you know, at the time, we've looked back on, you know, Elijah and these 400 prophets of Baal, and we see throughout much of the Old Testament how the children of Israel were in and out of idol worship. They would worship whatever idol they saw fit for a time, and then they would get punished and they would turn back to God. And, you know, even today we have idols, and it's not necessarily that, you know, someone has carved out an image of something that they think is a god, but, you know, it could be anything. For some people, an idol is money, or it's sports, or a particular athlete who is highly skilled at what they do. And, you know, anytime they put that in front of God, that is an idol. The next point is that God is the creator of all things. And back in our original text, Psalm 95, verses 4 and 5, in his hands are the deep places of the earth. The strength of the hills is his also. The sea is his, and he made it, and his hands formed the dry land. You know, so God, he created the world. A verse we're all familiar with, the very first verse of the Bible, Genesis 1, verse 1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then the Apostle John kind of lays it out a little bit more. It kind of goes into slightly more detail in a way. In John 1, verses 1 through 3, talks about in the beginning. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. So, you know, John says that, you know, everything that was made by God. There is nothing out there that isn't made by God. And then even in, while the Ten Commandments are given, it mentions how God worked for 6 days in Exodus 20 there. And then something that I was reminded of also in Psalms, Psalms 19:1, God's handiwork. Just need to get to the verse here. Psalm 19:1, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. I want you guys to do something, and if you need to close your eyes, do it, but please don't fall asleep on me. I want you to think of the most beautiful place you've been, or maybe you've seen, whether it's an island somewhere, or I'll give you an example. For me, it's the coastline of Florida. I've been there a few times, and it's absolutely beautiful. I love it. But so think of whatever you've seen is the most beautiful place on earth. And the amazing thing is, God created that. That was God's doing. And it's amazing that he would create something like that. And also, God gives us life, breath, and really everything. In Acts, the sermon to the Athenians here in Acts 17. And this is Paul speaking here after he kind of walked through Athens. We're going to look at verses 24, 25, then drop down to 28. Actually, I'm going to start in verse 24. God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is he worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things. And then verse 28, this is one of my favorite verses in the entire Bible. For in him we live and move and have our being, as certain of your own poets have said, for we are his offspring. So, you know, God has not only created these beautiful places, but he created you and I as well. And then another reason why we are to worship God is that he is the good shepherd. Again, back in our original text, verses 6 and 7 of Psalm 95. Oh, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker, for he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture and the sheep of his hand. Today, if ye will hear his voice. You know, again, I'm reminded of what King David said in Psalm 23:1, the Lord is my shepherd, and how true that is. And, you know, it talks about, again, there in verse 7, we are the people of his pasture and the sheep of his hand, and we are that today if we will hear his voice. John chapter 10, it talks about, Jesus is speaking about being the good shepherd and how the sheep will hear his voice. John 10:11, I was in Luke there for a second. John 10:11. I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. I also want to read verse 14. I am the good shepherd and know my sheep and have known of mine. So, you know, the sheep know his voice. Verses, and that's also mentioned earlier in the chapter, verses 3 through 5. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calleth his own sheep by name and leadeth them out. And when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. And a stranger will they not follow, but flee from him, for they know not the voice of strangers. So, you know, we know his voice. Of course, for us today, you know, the voice of God, quote unquote, is right here in the Bible. That's how we know God's voice, is what's written in the Bible and nothing else. And then kind of the last thing that it mentions in Psalm 95 is, it kind of references back to that generation that lost out on the promised land because of the things that they did. Verses 8 through the end of the chapter, harden not your heart as in the provocation and as in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my work. 40 years long was I grieved with this generation and said, it is a people that do err in their heart, and they have not known my ways, unto whom I swear in my wrath that they should not enter into my rest. We just looked at this situation that the Israelites went through not too long ago in our Bible class, because of their constant wavering away from God and turning back to the idols of the people around them. I believe about 23,000 lost their souls. It was the ones who were, I believe, ages 20 and up. Just before they were supposed to enter the promised land Numbers 13, verses 30 through 33, where the spies have come back. Caleb here is speaking. Numbers 13, verses 30 through 33. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, we are not able to go against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. So, these couple of spies said, hey, we can do this. We can overcome it. This is what we've been promised. And then the others said, no, they're too big. They're too strong. Those people forgot about the promise that God gave them. And in Numbers 14:29, talks about what was going to happen to those who were unbelieving. Says in verse 29 of chapter 14, Your carcasses shall fall in the wilderness, and all that were numbered of you according to your whole number, from 20 years old and upward, which have murmured against me. And then dropping down to verse 34, after the number of days in which ye searched the land, even 40 days, each day for a year, shall ye bear your iniquity, even 40 years, and ye shall know the breach of my promise. So, they were, because of everything that had happened, their fear, their unbelief, they were being punished and were to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. This is referenced in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. It's a lengthy reading. It basically just summarizes what happened. We don't have time to read that, but kind of bringing it to today, 2 Timothy, chapter 1, verse 7. Actually, I think it's supposed to be 1 Timothy. Okay, I wrote down the wrong verse. It's basically the verse that says, for God did not give us a spirit of fear. And then kind of to bring this to some more application in today, we've been talking about why we worship God. And, yes, he is the creator of the earth. in all things, and you know, he's a God above all gods, but there is no other God but him. You know, nothing else has any power over God, not even Satan, as John talked about this morning. And you know, when we are worshiping, we need to make sure that we are worshiping in spirit and in truth, as Jesus was telling that woman at the well in John 4:24. And then, you know, and again, going back to what the Israelites, this seems to be a theme, and you know, every leader of Israel seemed to have this issue in Joshua 24:15, where he is telling the children of Israel, you know, if it seem evil to you to serve God, then you can go serve an idol. And then he mentions that famous phrase, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And we definitely need to do that. You know, we need to make that choice to serve the Lord. And I know for me, it's not really a choice that I have to make. I know what I'm going to do. And, you know, this is the second time we have come into this building today, and everyone here has made that, you know, conscious decision to come and worship the Lord. And, you know, we need to be doing that, you know, every time these doors are open. So, you know, if we continually worship God and refuse any idols that are out there, and we continue to obey God's command, we will get what he has promised us. Just like he promised the Israelites Canaan, he has promised us today heaven. You know, for Christians, the promised land, that's the Christian's promised land, is heaven. But we can only go there by obeying him and worshiping him only, and no one else or nothing else. And I want to close with a quote from one of my professors at Freed when it comes in regards to worship. He says, "You will do nothing more important than worship God today," and how true that is. So tonight, if there's anyone here who has any need, maybe you've yet to be baptized, or maybe you're a Christian and you haven't been living right. If you have any need of any kind, please don't hesitate. Please do so as we come forward and stand sing the song of invitation.